But we'll jump into it right here. And I'm making very steely eye contact because I'm sitting down with the first guest of Kids Eat Toast Sometimes. Did I say that properly? We'll keep going. Kids Eat Toast Sometimes.
Is that like first take?
This is the continual take.
Ah, okay.
We don't cut things yet.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
Oh,
we tough are crowd.
Unfiltered.
Unfiltered.
Okay.
So you've heard him trying to creep into the conversation.
Yeah.
And you also would have heard his sultry voice by now.
Mm.
If you think it's kind of nostalgic, cast your mind back to your UCT days. This is, of course, the very talented anchor. I think you were the face of radio at one stage, which is no small feat. UCT?
Certainly not the behind.
Ah, but the butt of every joke.
Several.
As a white anchor at UCT, I think that's like a decent role to play.
Mm.
But the host of, or the former host of 104.5... Josh Hill.
Like continuing the link. UCT Radio.
Was that what you guys did? That's why I never listened to it. UCT Radio. Yeah. Like fake whatever that was.
Yeah, yeah. Arm actions were encouraged from behind the Mac. No.
I think that's almost like a TikTok move.
Oh,
that's how outdated I am. I say it's almost like a TikTok move.
Almost like one of those TikTok movies that they make. Their youth.
Very short, eh?
It's very quick, actually. They tick and they talk all day. Bro, you're going to have no sponsors left at this point.
So we actually, that's where we are at the moment.
gathering momentum for the ask.
Exactly. Speaking of momentum have just dropped the Proteas. Just the men, though.
They were that is tragic.
We'll keep this feminism sort of endorsement going.
They haven't been going backwards without momentum for some time.
No, don't.
Rather fitting. A dad joke to start off.
I don't think I can survive this podcast.
Me neither, but we'll trek on.
When you do a podcast on Zoom,
nothing's
funny. You could have like Dave Chappelle interviewing you or speaking to him and nothing's funny because there's like a delay and then they laugh. And then when you start to laugh, they've stopped laughing. It's very awkward.
It's such an obvious thing, but I hate when you like butt heads in trying to get your point across and someone else like starts up in a meeting or something. Ooh, that is tough. Cause then it's like, you have to go through the whole charade of, oh no, you go first. No, it's your turn. And then you just end up feeling a little bit depressed.
Mm. Yeah. Zoom, isn't it?
No.
Hardy does now. I mean, I'm gonna.
Everything is interrupted.
I'm gonna double up on my meat consumption just to make a point.
It's just the fans. It's just they're all chirping outside here. Settle down, everyone.
Now, 50% capacity, which means one person is here watching.
Here in the wooden cabin, I must say, Samuel, this is quite a setup you have. I feel like I'm being sort of like interrogated with these lights on. You know, put on some like heavy rock music and ask me some questions about my background. It's
intense. Your skin tone's far too light for that.
Oh, wow.
If anything, I know, can you say that? I always say like, can you say that and say it more? Like on the first part.
You go forward.
Yes, momentum.
I always like physically know when something is like inappropriate, but then I do kind of enjoy it.
You like, charge through it.
Well, no, I enjoy it when someone else says it. I won't say it. I mean, we think it. Not say it, but still appreciate the moment because someone else says it.
I hear you. I think it was the first podcast episode where I was chatting to soon-to-be Dr. Mazin Jeppi.
Oh, yes.
Makes him sound more prolific. At the moment, he just kind of DJs and studies.
Mm.
No one wants to hear that. I'm joking, Mazin, you are great. But
top academic.
Indeed. And
seems like a lovely lad. Someone you can have a brunch with, I think.
He worked at Starling, so he is well-versed in the brunch.
No, that's cheating, though. I mean, like, actually, like, asking him on, like, a kind of a mandate.
I'd be down.
Mandate.
Yeah, mandate, yeah.
Probably the most heterosexual thing to say. that and a little, like, tap in a sports changing room.
Post-wicket.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you had a clasp there.
Good bit of clasp. Oh, good job.
Mm.
No wonder your gluteus maximus is firing on all cylinders.
I'm loving this little distance here.
I know. It's not 1.5.
Do you think we're in... Is this the red zone?
This is the danger zone.
Oh, yeah. It's grope free, though. I think you could probably...
I know. This is a product of the Me Too generation.
Probably survive a Me Too scare.
This is show business now.
Yeah.
Not even Greedy Harvey could grope someone from... I don't like where we're going. I hear you when you say you get that feeling in your body.
I get
body.
A feeling whelms. It overwhelms? It whelms.
Overwhelmed.
It overwhelms.
It's one of those odd words. You can be underwhelming or overwhelming, but I've never heard of someone being whelming.
Never simply whelmed.
You are actually quite a whelming individual now that I think of it.
But that's like the most neutral thing to say about someone. Borderline insulting. Whelming. It's just like you are no value added.
It sounds like a vegetable. How were those whelmings? Well, they were under. Nah, there's something there. We're close.
Jeez. Right on the precipice.
We're close.
That was tough. Tough to let go, actually. Tough to just let it sail by. But we'll carry on.
We'll carry on. That's the nice thing about a podcast. You can't bomb because you're just talking to someone.
You know what I realized the other day? I was in nature at a river. And I tried to tell a joke to a buddy of mine and bombed, didn't go well. And the sounds of nature when a joke doesn't go well, because they've heard it and it just kind of whispers in the wind, sits there for ages. Wow, that's not great. It's not a great feeling to have.
But immediately refreshed, nonetheless, after being immersed in nature.
I'd probably end up going for quantity over quality anyway, so.
Okay. What was the joke? Just
toss it out. This was a long time ago. This was over 3 days, so. That is long gone. I will forget a joke that I say 30 seconds or anything that I learn or say 30 seconds ago.
I find that
momentarily in there and then out.
That's interesting. I'm with reading. I feel like I'm engaged in like very scholarly work or just reading a novel. And if I don't have a bookmark, because even if I like, what's it called? Dog ear the pages.
Oh yeah. That's like grade 3 in the library kind of behavior. I wouldn't dog ear anything.
I had a teacher who said if you read a book, you had to like see that it was read. He was an alcoholic and didn't last long at the school. But
did he whisper this to you?
It was actually after class.
Mm.
So one of those mallet situations.
Oh, dear.
I feel like we're being naughty.
Oh, are we? Again.
Again. Very early. And I'm not one to... I'm trying to get sponsorship, Josh.
Yeah, no. We have to out here talking keep it light. Keep it light.
Fiona Mallet. Lots of controversy there.
The political angle. You're never far from a bit of satire, I feel. I think that's kind of one of your strengths.
Oh, thank you.
Here we are at Kids Eat Toast Sometimes with Samuel. One of his big strengths, satirical jargon, or just any sort of kind of flipping of the script, I must say. It's been very impressive to watch you grow.
Ah.
Young man.
Young man, very kind of you. Wow. I feel I look older than you though.
You have a grizzled kind of, you kind of look like a lumberjack that was unemployed, but recently came into a bit of like fund, like a little bit of money.
And then spent it all building a podcast set. It's the lumberjack.
But it hasn't like left you yet, the fact that you're a lumberjack.
Humble roots. Well, I feel as white people, we're constantly clinging or like looking for some sort of heritage or culture. Heritage Day. That was what? Last weekend. Everyone got very excited.
Jeez.
I like how Corona took another break.
Don't segue without a helmet.
I thought we weren't doing any written material for this part.
No, me neither.
Oh.
I didn't think so. Prepared. Your accusations are flying.
Segue without a helmet.
To be a part of this, guys.
That was like an old Mark Norman. I hate myself. But
yes, he's good, eh? I love him.
I love him. But he's been doing it for so long.
I think maybe this last special of his, got him in front of like millions of people with his last sort of.
And that's right.
It's a good trajectory.
It's very interesting because imagine being on YouTube or releasing a whole special on YouTube 5 years ago. You would have most likely been the laughing stock and not in the happy, belly aching laughs, more like, you know, poor Mark. And now, if no one picks you up, and I don't know how no one did pick him up, you just put it out on YouTube and you, obviously there's less money involved, but you are still able to reach a similar level of stardom.
He's very adaptable. So I think he's going to be one of the ones to watch out for. It's like a sports center comment. In the coming sort of years, because I mean, he just goes out and does it anyway. Parks. I've seen him in Park Norman's. Yeah.
I thought that was his cousin.
Debatable. like in
parking lot, Norman.
Yeah, parking lot.
That was funny.
He just goes out and like does comedy anywhere, just out on the streets. And I think that kind of tenacity with comedy is, pretty awesome to see, even during like COVID times. So I reckon he'll be just fine. He'll be one of those guys that can adapt quite quickly to the new normal comedy wise.
Absolutely. Yeah, that parking lot stuff he did was hilarious. And it was also just refreshing to watch someone go about the whole experience of like making content, making comedy in such a transparent way. And I know that's part of his brand. It's like, oh, fuck, I bombed. You know, comedy, this is...
Kevin Hart.
Yeah. This, I hate myself. But, you know, it's still refreshing to not have like a clean 60-minute hit the angles.
But it's interesting because it's so raw, and also he's doing material that he would have come up that day or yesterday. You know, something that's just like fresh, kind of one or two drafts and out there. So it's interesting to see from the outside, as an outsider.
Yeah, for sure. And I don't know, his style is very alluring. I also do think it is for you or it isn't, because if you watch him half-heartedly, I think he could get pushed into that like dad one-liner comic, which isn't, I don't think it's funny. But he's almost crafted a persona.
Burn dads everywhere.
Yeah. Hey, jeez. Dad, thanks for paying for my tuition. We're like, fuck you as well. No, we love our dads, of course. But
all of them.
All of them, exactly. They're not exactly...
A handkerchief poking out here. Let's pop that back in. Ooh.
Suggestive handkerchief. Just creeping out of it.
Simmer down there, Jimmy.
Yeah, okay. But dads are like the true... gatekeepers when it comes to comedy. When you realize your dad isn't funny, it's probably at the same time you've started watching comedy or have developed your own sense of humor.
At 4 years old. First time, perhaps.
Well, you can say this with your parents overseas. Mine, I still live with them.
Oh, geez, yeah.
And they're probably the only people that do listen to the podcast, so just put them on blast, my only fans.
You haven't flown the nest as of yet.
No. Well, I had grand plans until I was stabbed in the back.
Oh, recently. Jeez.
Yeah.
For those out there, out of the loop, Sam and I perhaps hope to live with each other one day. That's an odd statement to make.
It seemed more concrete than that at the time.
Yes, we were planning to be roommates, but then something didn't work out, kind of out of our control. But I think that love and commitment to the relationship is still there.
Yeah, is the dog barking. I don't know if you can hear that, but it's really going ham in the background there. Love him. But you're recently back from Spain. Let's chat a bit about that.
Oh, sorry, I'm hitting the table again. I don't want to touch anything, Sam. I don't want to fiddle too much.
It's almost like a hostage situation. You're wired up here, like, be calm, have a good time. Lights. Do you? And you're like a little Al-Qaeda interrogation. Wow. I think you can do that.
You really stretched out for all the syllables there.
I know.
We wanted all of them included.
I know. We went for it. Mm. It didn't sound good.
No.
I can't imagine it'll sound good to a listener. But we move on. Josh, you're recently back from Spain.
I am.
Why were you there? Tell us a bit about your trip.
Oh, okay. So last September, I embarked on a little journey to Madrid.
For those of you who can't speak Spanish.
AKA. I was studying a master's in customer experience and innovation. Bit of a mouthful, but a fun time. So it did overlap a little bit with COVID times, but we were kind of operating normally until about February or so. And then, we had 2 months of serious lockdown.
Okay, would you give me that degree again? Because often I'm only half listening and trying to think of something funny. Funny comes into my head and I haven't listened. So that's where we are now.
Great tip for any interviewers out there.
Exactly. Yeah.
So it's customer experience and innovation.
Okay.
As very pretentious new, as you get.
But very like new age sort of.
It's a modern sort of degree. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Kind of the whole purpose of the degree was trying to get down to the crux of like human-centered design. So trying to solve sort of human problems and not just make businesses based on sort of profit.
Okay. Yeah. Very like Instagram-y.
Very Instagram.
Ethical consumption production, which is good.
Sustainable, I don't know. All the trigger words.
Yeah, I said like, so sarcastically, but that is very cool. Did that, in terms of content, did that ever overlap with COVID system and how like businesses and societies will move forward with COVID?
Well, it's interesting you say, because we did a project, I think in the second term, a service design challenge about sort of access to healthcare in different like rural areas in Madrid. And there were some interesting pain points and I guess findings from that project. And one of them was just about the like crazy amount of like limited sort of touch points there are. in Madrid for people that are sort of out of a certain income bracket to like afford healthcare and whatnot. So that was quite interesting to delve into because that project overlapped with the start of COVID.
Mm.
So we were getting like pre-COVID, like just normal life. And then now, even with a more clogged hospital system, how people are struggling to sort of find like appointments for actually anything like outside of the city center.
And it was terrifying at one stage. Spain was one of the epicenters. Mm. I remember phoning you and you were like naked on your balcony. Or was that your roommate? A bit of Brokeback Mountain action.
But it could have been either of us, perhaps simultaneously. But
that I was quite aroused. So I think it was your roommate because you were bare-chested.
Oh, yes.
Greek-looking fellow.
Greek man, yes. Dimitri. Jeez. Whew, good memories.
Good memories with the big D. Mm. So, and then what was that actually like living in, because it's not like South Africa where if you, you know, chances are you've got a university education, you'll have a nice sort of living situation. You guys are quite packed in sort of urban city living in a city like Madrid.
In general or during COVID specifically?
Well, I suppose you wouldn't change accommodation
when
COVID started. So both.
Mm. So for me, I think I've got a grasp of the question. Gonna just take a stab.
We can
chat about it afterwards. I think that outside of COVID times, Madrid was like a spectacular sort of city. Those curved edges to the building, everything is just like colorful and live, and the cobblestones and the heritage and history of like a Spain. It's palpable, you can feel it in the air. People are having tapas until, you know, like 11, 12 at night, and there's, you know, sort of clubs only open at like 1. It's bizarre. Like everything's just later there, but it's just a very laid back, light-hearted culture. And it was awesome to live in. And you went from the bustling streets one day to literally 24 hours later on a Friday night, you've got like, could hear a pin drop on the main road. So I think it was a very like, completely different experience after that. But I think we had it pretty decent, Dimitri and I, my Greek lover. Mm. To be honest, I always had the more conservative, like I'd rather just be safe kind of approach.
Mm.
So I was actually quite happy from the start to just like dig into seeing out the sort of hardcore time indoors and literally just going out to get food. I think the attitude for me, I wasn't really looking for like a due date or deadline. I was just like happy to sort of go with the flow.
Yeah.
And I think it was quite important for me in terms of headspace or like mental health to just like be not, you know, be like haphazard with how you approach things like being too casual about the whole sort of global situation. Because obviously it was terrifying. It was quite serious at times. But just to be like lighthearted in the room with like Dimitri or other friends on Zoom and whatever, just to keep things, you know, relatively calm, was definitely a plus.
For sure. Okay. I like that. I've certainly struggled with my sort of reintegration because like you, I think in a lot of people think in quite strong binaries, you know, if they're like, there's a pandemic, you're like, ah, fuck, you know, well, I'm going to stay at home, save lives. So you're like, well, if I'm not staying at home, I'm a murderer. Or you've got that sort of, and of course, that's a very literal interpretation, but it certainly felt like that to a degree for me. So I got this sort of bunker mentality. And the problem with that is there is no due date. There's not like, okay, we won, you know.
You can't actually get stuck in the the sort of frigid state or the sort of non-transient state of actually just being like without a get out of jail time.
For sure. And like COVID requires everyone to be very flexible and it's very hard to have these concrete views of like, okay, you know, if my friends are seeing other people, if they're going to parties or that sort of stuff, I can't touch them or I can't. To be honest, I think outside of Chloe, you're probably one of the first people I've sat down in like a maskless environment and just chatted with. So
that's peculiar. Hey? It's actually, for me, it's kind of a interesting thing on both sides because on one hand, it's so crazy how quickly humans can actually adapt to being in a complete like state of essential like lockdown. And on the other hand, like for me, I found my social skills and like social anxiety actually like crept up when I was getting into like meeting people again, like re-entering the social scene. Well, that sounds a bit dodgy.
Mm.
Sounds like Tinder or something. Re-entering.
Tinder's not even dodgy. It's just depressing. That's my...
After being luck with you guys yet, eh, Chloe? You guys struck out so far.
No. The worst is when you find this...
This is why I'm here. This is quite a forward engagement.
I think it's going to be a fucking nightmare for anyone who's listening to this to try and work out who this Chloe person is. It's not like she's mic'd up or visible.
She's behind the blinding lights.
What was that wonderful movie with Joaquin Phoenix where he falls in love with the operating system? There we go. Her. Chloe is her.
You need, what's Rogan's like little research guy?
Jamie.
Pull that up, Jamie.
Pull that up, Jamie. Rogan. How horrible is his new set? Have you seen it?
I don't think I've seen a live video or video from his new.
Have you seen pictures of it or
no
visual footage? He looks
I'm sure it's nothing like this.
It's actually embarrassing because if I can do this, what is Joe Rogan doing? I mean, come on, Joe.
All that Spotify cash and what has he got so far?
It literally looks like the inside of a grill. Which would be funny if he had like a pun. Yeah, exactly. If he was like, you know, or if he had like a sponsored Texan barbecue promotion, he was like, oh, we keep grilling them, Jamie. And then everyone would like canned laughter. But that's not his thing. It's an idea. It'd be better than what's happening now. But
I'll check it out. Jeez, scathing reviews.
Terrible review. And he's like the podcast hero.
Mm.
Big Joe Rogan.
What is your best case scenario with this podcast going forward?
Now that is straight to the bone. And
cutting-edge question.
I think for this period now, it's better for me to have very short-term goals. Because I think with anything, whether it's a business, a venture, a degree, if you're constantly looking, of course I want this to blow up and for this to be a very... Like, I want this to be a platform where South Africans
can... Explosive content.
Exactly. You know, that 9/11 stuff. Mm. And where...
A date has been brought into the...
I've never understood America's obsession with 9/11. I'll just say that.
Or 11/9, depending on...
Exactly.
Mm.
And if you're Chinese, what is it?
I'm not sure.
Happy days, perhaps, for this... Whoa.
The year of the rat. Okay.
I'm not feeling good.
What is that feeling, though? That you get? It's a PC awareness?
This is a very natural segue and I like it because it's something I wanted to chat about.
We can
about.
Go back to what we were chatting
we
about.
We can do that later.
Yeah.
It is interesting because I think it is... The worst people in the world are undoubtedly those that have no self-awareness. Like if you're not self-aware, you suck.
And do you think that... I love you bottled that down just a little statement. Do you think that that correlates to kind of a sense of humor or maybe how you get along with someone without like, because if you can see in an interaction that someone doesn't have like an ego, they can make fun of themselves, they are self-aware, does that make them more attractive to you to like be like a friend or,
you know, how self-aware are you? Not at all. No, for sure. But it's more, I think like being self-aware is a massive umbrella and there's lots of stuff that falls under it. So if you're self-aware, you can probably take yourself less seriously. Like, but you also have I'm a bit of a dick. Like, you have to have the confidence to be like, well, I'm going to start a podcast and people are going to listen. And then when people like, or at the beginning, especially when no one was listening, you'll be like, shit's good. Like, people are going to listen. And so it's a fine line between actually, like I said, being self-aware and having that confidence in yourself or that like have the blinkers. Is it blinkers down or blinkers off? Blinkers on.
Blinkers on.
There it is.
Yeah.
Third time lucky.
I think, but is that like a fine line then between self-awareness and self-belief? Like you need to have a little bit of both. Because I imagine for you, I mean, if you're too self-aware, you can just make enough fun of yourself to like talk yourself out of a venture. You know, say, no one will listen. You know. But actually, you need a bit of self-belief there, a little bit of confidence to kind of boost. So they work in tandem. Yeah.
And I think, and that like, ties in very nicely to the social moments we find ourselves, or like our zeitgeist, where it is.
What a word to toss in there.
It's so, whenever I say zeitgeist.
Or Mentos and a Coke there.
It reminds me of Nazi Germany. Zeitgeist. It has that
conversation
sort of
is fizzing.
It has that Hitler-esque sort of, you can die, guys! You can imagine him.
Jeez. Yeah.
That's exactly how he speaks. You slipped
into character all a bit too easy there.
I know. You should see my moustache and like all... Did you see, again, that Chloe, feeling...
Chloe, some kinks coming out here.
I know. Everyone thinks I'm Jewish as well. So I like get a pass on it. I am. No. I'm not. Shabbat Shalom to our Jewish viewers. Shana Tova, I believe, is it. Sounds like a wonderful Jewish girl, Shana Tova. How was last night? Oh, we spent a...
She couldn't be bad.
Lovely.
She would be lovely.
Or sisters.
Another brunch candidate.
Shana and Tova. I don't know how... This is the Jewish community. But that's also like, we've said something about everything, about everyone. You're not things, you're people. Just to clarify.
Just remember. What is this Truman Show you're running here, Samuel?
You're the going show with the, you're is going, behind the curtain.
You're going with the beanie, hair at the back. There's a clump there.
Do you want to see what it looks like?
Let's have the full Monty. Oh, yes.
Let me just put that there. Isn't it? The thing is, it's very awkward that was, to get the hair. Oh, no, not so much. Abandon.
That little toss there with the beanie.
I know. It's not even mine. That's how you toss a beanie that isn't yours.
Yeah.
I know. It could have been my grand's.
101.
Exactly.
So what are we sporting here? You've got quite a luscious mop.
It's, I don't know. I was going for the, this is actually my hair slightly straightened after some Tresemme endorsements.
Oh, checks in the mail.
Were you there before? No, not in the mail. That was more of a Clicks reference.
Yes.
The natural good hair. What did you think of that whole situation?
We're back to the satire. Here we go. What did I think? I'm a dummy. I don't really have opinions on this kind of thing.
That's also a brilliant answer because I feel...
It's just like, they made a mistake. Racism obviously enters the conversation and then you find out further details, which kind of confuses the whole thing. Can't it just be bad marketing sometimes? It's just like a terrible ad.
I don't know. I think you've badly marketed yourself there. I love how you started. You're like... I don't have an opinion. Now that that's out of the way, here's my opinion. You do actually have to... I hate that we have to tiptoe around things. And it seems that... And I can sense that, you know, the warning lights are going off.
They're there.
It's like, you know, you got to turn around. It's a roadblock. You've been drinking, but you press on because, you know, you've got to like Arnold Schwarzenegger impersonation that you know this cop is going to love. That didn't really happen. If I saw a roadblock and had... No, I don't drink and drive.
Do you toss out the Arnie when under arrest?
No, I don't know where that came from, to be honest. But, you know, instead of just openly...
I mean, you're very conscious, obviously, that it doesn't affect your life as much as white guy walking around.
But that's...
You wouldn't think about it. So it's easy to cast it away as, just simply bad marketing.
But, I mean, I think that's like the self-reflexivity. Got that out in the end.
Nailed it.
And being self-aware to know that, okay, maybe, you know, because this doesn't affect you or because you don't have the sort of experience of like white people or like white companies telling you your hair looks shit and, you know, dehumanizing you, you don't really know. So when people jump on with opinions and be like, it's just bad marketing. Like, I understand what they're saying, but I'm like, your opinion isn't really necessary. But I also... begrudge the fact that we seem to be living in a world where everything is based on lived experience. So, you know, you could have a wonderful political commentator be like, oh, what Clicks did was unethical.
Are you drifting into your Markle?
Hey, Markle's a good oak.
He's pretty on it, eh?
He is.
He's consistent.
Exactly. And, you know, you've got public intellectuals who want to weigh in on something, but some Twitter user hacks them down at the knees because they don't have lived experience or they're not black. And I don't think that's a very healthy position to be in.
Well, it kills the conversation, doesn't it?
Well, it's not a conversation. Just you speaking in a feedback loop with other angry people. And I'm not saying people shouldn't have been angry.
I just don't... There's some subjects that just aren't inherently...
The Ronski.
You're right there. Jeez, this 1.5 minutes is getting shorter and shorter here.
Get the face mask down. That was dry as well.
Yeah, very dry. Oh, dear.
That's what the Rona sounds like. Oh, dear. Ooh, this is like a bit of ASMR. Okay, just like that. So I had Corona and now it's gone. A biological...
What was your remedy out the back?
Ooh, To be honest, there was a bit of water. A bit of water to the back of the throat.
Oh, yeah.
I couldn't bring myself to gargle. Kills I wanted all. To gargle. Yeah. Trump was wrong. It's the just water. The
magic.
Mm, exactly.
H2O, I'm cured.
I was going to start like maybe attempting to come in and I thought, just leave it.
Yeah.
This is...
Rather just leave that out to dry.
If anyone wanted to know what the low points of my life was, I'd say this.
Just right now?
This whole interaction. No, I'm only kidding. But you know, very exciting political news. And we'll just tap dance around it a bit because it's not that exciting. But Biden v. Trump, who you got? Who's your pick your fighter?
Oh, I'm so curious about the American Democratic Party's obsession with like middle of the roaders. Just like kind of middle America vote, hopefully. The 2016 election was a clear sort of indication of how a divergent figure can actually draw a lot of that middle sort of neutral vote. And I can't see why it can't happen again. I mean, a lot of people obviously thinking that maybe Trump won't be reelected now, but it's just as possible as the last time, to be honest. But I'd say Biden should probably take it. I mean, he should. I think Harris was a good VP pick.
Yeah, but that also, that sort of stuff just...
It
feels so...
strategic, obviously.
Well, one would hope at that sort of, you know, the stakes have never been higher. Yeah. Oh, Harris!
Pick out of the hat situation.
Oh, and she's black. Awesome.
Oh, terrific.
Answer me this. If Obama was on the ticket for president, would Kamala Harris be his VP? Not a chance.
Not necessarily, but...
I don't think there's a chance in hell.
Yeah.
Because that's like, and that's my problem with like the Democrats being like, oh, you know, Republicans are racist. Like, so are you guys, you know, you just leverage it better. Did I really say that?
Wow. It's hard for me to kind of just, because obviously you just fire from the hip. It's hard for me to always kind of be like, yes, I hear what you're saying there.
I feel like I'm more of a guest that comes on and just says crazy shit and everyone's like, ooh, and you're like, ah, thank God he's gone. Next week we'll be back to normal. And it's like, no, next week it's still me.
No, but I love that about you. You do tend to be, you know, bold with your points of view. And I think that's probably what's going to take you quite far in this sort of realm, the podcasting world. Because, I mean, to be honest, you don't really hide behind your opinion. And that's very attractive to listenership, I'm sure.
Yeah. No, but I thank you. That's very kind of you. But at the same time, I don't want to come across as someone who's trying to just like spew clickbaity headlines and little sound bites.
You're actually genuinely interested in like politics and like home sort of like government and whatnot.
Yes.
So it's an interesting fuel to your fire there. Because I think for a lot of people, it can just become sort of noise. But with this podcast, at least from what I've seen, you're delving into some sort of real questions, bringing some lighthearted perspective to it, which is a good way to grapple with it and walk through the different issues.
For sure. And again, thank you. It's very kind of you to even have watched an episode. My hang up, not hang up with exactly. I was like, that's a feels like home, but I was like, no, that's Italy. Spanish reference amiss. I find it quite bizarre when people, young and old, reduce politics to noise because it plays such a big part in our lives. I think that's a fairly obvious statement. It just seems bizarre. It's my new buzzword, bizarre. I say it all the time. Bizarre. It's bizarre. The news. Jeez, a Huxtable. Stay away from the Cosby stuff.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a message for everyone.
Yeah. Genuine good advice.
Yeah. It's such a big player. And I think South Africans or white South Africans maybe feel that because they aren't represented to the point where, you know, the ANC...
Oh, shame.
Exactly. Oh, come here, you. You didn't go
But I mean, so on some level, you can't be angry at a government that you don't play any part in electing or engaging with on some level.
Yeah, well, exactly. If you're not going to be knowledgeable or cast your vote in the election. Mm. I mean, you should vote, even if you're going to spoil your ballot in some sort of like egotistical protest.
Mm.
That's still, for me, miles better than, you know, things aren't going to change.
I mean, for me, it's always curious to elect someone. Like, I don't really believe in, like, one person is better really suited to make, like, sweeping decisions on behalf of millions. No. I mean, how can you have, like, a system that gets down to, like, one president for democracy? You know, it is kind of bizarre. But at the same time, that is where our society is now. That's kind of how it's all laid out. So, and I may have lost my train of thought many minutes ago, but I think you do have to keep engaged, because otherwise you're just like a passive complainer sometimes.
Exactly. And I also think it's very naive for people to think that, you know, if I vote for Cyril Ramaphosa, things are going to change. You know, these are massive political systems and machines that operate very independently from what the boss at the top is doing. They're like massive corporations. You know, if you go into, let's take, what's a reference that isn't dated? If, say, you go into Sportsman's Warehouse, and you get super shitty service.
Oh, what a warehouse that is.
It is. It's
Where do you go straight away?
Straight to the bats.
Straight to the cricket bats.
Straight to the bats.
And you're lifting three or four just to feel the weight.
No, you first smell them.
Oh, you gotta smell them first.
Have they been oiled?
Ooh.
Yes, they
have. Pre-oiled. Jeez. Yeah. Fantastic. Yeah.
Straight from the Indian sweatshop. This'll do. This'll be fun to play with on the weekend.
Yeah.
But no, it's like, so Ramaphosa is not gonna fix everything for you, and like the NC is like a massively corrupt body, but that doesn't mean every member of the ANC is corrupt, of course not. Mm. And the DA is not going to save you, but it doesn't mean everyone in the DA is this white supremacist dickhead. And, you know, I know it's tough when John Stiernason's out there bleating, but come on, white people, we're better than that.
Two or three times a year, you get like a video recommended on Facebook about him berating some cabinet individuals and...
Do you want to know a fun fact about John Stiernhuizen? For all his complaining and chat about qualifications, about EFF members and ministers and that sort of stuff, John Stiernhuizen's highest qualification is a matric.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And I would never belittle someone for all that unless they were John Stiernhuizen and continuously attacked other people's credentials.
Yeah, that's kind of like his whole angle sometimes.
You're not qualified.
He's like, no, John, you must go do your NBTs.
Oh, my goodness.
But, yeah, it's...
such a cruel system, that, eh? Like, it's not an easy jump from high school to university, I think, in general.
I started off in a very commerce-y degree. Straight away, I was like, this is not for me. I can't do this. It was primarily because I was failing maths. I literally couldn't do it.
Mm. So there wasn't just, like, an emotive, oh, God, this is just tough.
And then I bounced around in the humanities, which was very interesting because it allowed me to go through a journey that I would have never had in commerce. I mean, I've got so many commerce friends. I love the boots and a boutette, which is like a sniffany, I suppose. Same thing. Mm. But, you know, it's the same crew from high school. You're doing, you're not doing easy stuff. Let me clear that up. I couldn't do it. It's very hard what you're doing in your own
right. But there's something about that kind of learning that's very, it's very obviously like hard, like tangible knowledge.
Mm.
You're learning sort of systems and processes, whatever.
But they're dead.
But it stops there sometimes on the page. You know, you write an exam and that's like that. You're not necessarily going to remember the nitty gritty formulas 5 years down the road. So, this is not to bash commerce. I mean, I obviously spent a couple years doing more marketing sort of business-y degrees as well. But I very much value my time at the humanities because it's kind of like you kind of have to go internal to then reflect, grapple with kind of material and then externally kind of express that. That's what I appreciated about the humanities aspect.
Mm. I'm fascinated with narratives and people and how we operate and why we think and all these personal narratives that we construct whilst we're viewing things, eating, forming friendships. And I think the structure of an essay is, you know, that blank page and how you're going to, whether it's a
little cursor.
Exactly. Just popping up.
Yeah.
And whether that's going to be in sociology or you're writing English paper, you're still confronted with this blank page and opportunity to construct the narrative. Even if you're citing academic sources, which you have to be doing, obviously, you're tying in a narrative and you're creating something, which is a very interesting experience that I don't necessarily think you get to have crunching numbers or being negatively marked for a wrong multiple choice question. Yeah. I got PTSD from those multiple choices. Like,
did you ever guess? Were you a
No. When I saw minus one, I was like, okay, moving on from this section.
Oh, that's a gamble, eh? Do you go for the gamble?
Yeah, do you run the gamble?
The risk.
But it's a confusing time. And one story I did want you to share, because I wanted so much of these engagements, I just love that they're immortalized by the fact that I've recorded them. And yeah, it'd be cool if you guys watched them. And all you people who are watching who say you've subscribed to the channel, I know I sound like a YouTuber, you haven't. So I take that
back. Do you catch people out?
No, there's no way of knowing, I don't think. I'm not tech savvy, so I'm just like...
Do you get a sense, though, from some people that they're like, oh, awesome stuff, Sam, but maybe they haven't actually like seen the content? They just kind of appreciate that you've started something?
No, to be honest, I've received some really nice, flattering... feedback from people.
And we'll read them out to you now.
which has been great, because making content is pretty hard. It's been a very humbling process. You think because, you know, you're this guy, you can carry this and you've got certain images of yourself, that I'll do it and it'll be great. And then it's not great and you're like,
But you've almost got a perception of yourself potentially like 2-3 years down the line. Like, you can see that you can do it.
Sure.
But it's like the jump between not having started something to being comfortable, that's quite a gap.
Exactly that. And I'm in no position to be handing out advice, but I'll do it anyway. And I think the problem we have with, and this goes across whether you're making...
This is what you wanted to ask.
No.
Okay.
Canned the question.
Canned it.
We'll come back to it. We'll end on it. Mm-hmm. And I think whether you're in entertainment, whether you're going out to be an entrepreneur, whatever you're doing in the world, we have this... Well, the internet has provided this strange, like, temporal black hole where we think it all...
Ooh, gorgeous description. A+.
We think it's all going to happen very quickly. Mm. And if you don't blow up, you disappear.
I think that's quite a modern thing, to be rushed with success.
Mm.
I think it's definitely something that is more affecting your 20-somethings... 30-somethings nowadays than it did maybe even 15, 20 years ago.
Mm, I agree with that completely. I think there's a lot of success on young people to be remarkable or have all their shit together or for this to be doing numbers on YouTube or Spotify. And there's no shortcut. It's one of my favorite things from Kevin Hart amongst cheating on his pregnant wife that he did.
That's also in your top three.
That's my Mount Rushmore. I wouldn't make top three, but I mean, you can be funny, but you're not funny enough to cheat on your pregnant wife. I think everyone's like, oh.
A reality check.
And he was very terrible in the way he handled it, but that's not the point. I think that was on his, like, he tried to do like a documentary in which he like half-heartedly apologized whilst promoting all the new shit he did.
Mm.
The more vain side of me was like, this was cool. But the humanitarian was not on board. And anyway,
you have many aspects or facets to your personality.
But why wouldn't you? Why would you box yourself into one or two things? Like, I'm an introvert. So you go like, I'm shy. Like, I'm an extrovert. You're just like running around parties shouting.
But is that triggered or instigated by your environment? Or is that internally yourself, you actually can like morph yourself into being interested in different things? Or becoming interested in different things, like engaging with them?
I'm not too sure I grasp the question.
Fully. Kind of like, do you rather mirror your environment? So let's say high energy, like situations, you can match that. And then more slower contemplative times, you can also match that sort of energy. Or do you think that there's like literally, like rather are you adaptable or do you have different Sams?
For example, someone got brought up in conversation that... this person likes to be referred to, or their pronouns, preferred pronouns, were he, she, and they.
Mm.
So they wanted all of them. And when I heard it, I burst out laughing. I couldn't contain myself. I just thought it was the funniest thing I've ever heard, because it was the funniest thing I've ever heard, because I'd understand if you want to be identified as he or she or they.
But are you a version of Samuel in that moment, or are you like kind of omniscient looking at the situation?
No, so I'm saying my natural, like Sam, who likes to laugh at everything and be naughty, I burst out laughing. But say he or she came through the door and announced this, or I had heard from back channels that I would 100% pepper in they, he and she, and then probably laugh about it afterwards. But I would be very respectful to that person. And I feel that's what we've lost. Is that because you are...
The teasing and respect, or the...
Yes, the nuance that exists between the two, that you... that. I'm not transphobic, or, you know, I don't understand the LGBTQ community. You see, even that, like, the new letters added on every day doesn't mean that you hate homosexual people. It just means you're catching up to a very fast-paced, changing society. So, but the nuance of laughing at being like, that, I find that so just bizarre that someone wants to be referred to
as all three. In that moment, you're laughing at the situation, I'm assuming, mark. And not necessarily making fun of the individual.
No, no.
Because that's the difference then.
Exactly. No. If I went to them and were like, hello, she, you know, like, can someone get they out of the room? They, you know, it's not.
I made the mistake of maintaining eye contact during that little episode. My goodness. That's going to keep me awake at night.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm recovering.
They're going to come for you. But I'm saying, so the nuances to everything. And I think when we lose the ability to laugh and giggle and play, and I'm not saying people have been like, oh, transphobic people, I mean, transgender people, what a lach. It's not like, you know, this is their...
You can't do that to me.
Yeah, but exactly. You know, you should just be able to laugh. You know, you go, that was fucking funny. And it made me laugh because it was naughty. And at the same time, you go, I completely empathize and want a trans person to feel completely equal in society.
But you know what the interesting duality about this is, and where comedy, I believe, is going to come even more relevant down the line, is that people actually escape to comedy more and more now. And it's that non-PC world that people are able to engage with or kind of laugh at that is so becoming even more attractive. Because you'll have people feeling uncomfortable, as I do sometimes, having sort of certain terms mentioned in conversation, kind of have that like little bodily reaction. But then you'll go and watch a comedian and laugh at a new special that they have talking about these issues. So that's an interesting kind of duality, like real life versus...
It is. And I
watching
think
something it's on also Netflix or whatever.
When you're watching a comedian...
Or Netflix plug.
Netflix, yeah. Come on, Netflix. Come
Bring
on.
The cash.
We know you're interested.
Yes.
And I think when you... Say you're watching a comedy show, you have that anonymous cloak on, you know, a body of cheers and laughs. Or when you're at home and Bill Burr says something outrageous and you're like, chortle, and then you're like, oh, yep, I've got a sticker on my computer. There's no ways they know I laughed at that homophobic joke, you know. And then when you unpack it, you're like, oh, it wasn't homophobic. He was actually just making fun of gay people. And
which is way better.
No, not for being gay. It was just a joke about gay people.
Of course.
You know, and that's...
This is me just trying to tease you. For sure. In this situation, we've got layers of tease.
And we've completely lost that. So, and Dave Chappelle, who is... I've spoken to you about this before. Is like my absolute favorite comedian.
See, now there's a risk taker.
Exactly.
There's a risk taker.
I mean, one of these... That special Sticks and Stones or Equanimity. He makes like a lot of transgender jokes. And his rationale is that they're jokes for one. And, you know, wouldn't this group, instead of being ostracized and, you know, don't touch transgender people, you know, and spoken about like they aren't actually people, be given the normal Dave Chappelle treatment and just be made fun of? And I get it. When it is Dave Chappelle's not transgender, I'm not transgender. I don't know the struggles people go through. And I do also get that lived experience argument. I think it's a very important one. So many people go, lived experience. It's like, you only listen to your maths teacher because they've got maths experience. You know, it's not, you need, it's a very fundamental way of how we assign knowledge to people. It's like they're experienced in this. Like if you're experienced the sex change, you know, more than a K comedian who's up. But
so we placed a lot of trust in our teachers back in the day. Math teachers, of course, in particular.
Even Kent Locke, he got a lot of trust. Are you familiar with Kent Locke?
Kent Locke? Why is this familiar?
Oh, how do you not know about Kent Locke? We will wrap on this. Actually, okay, we'll wrap on that last question I wanted to ask you. But Kent Locke was basically the porn pastor. And I don't say that in jest. That is who he was. He was the...
Is this of the photographer guy?
Yes.
The, I believe, like, sports photographer.
Yeah. Did you...
Okay, now it's coming back to me.
I think it was just when you left school, he kind of came onto the pornography scene. And he would take amazing photos. Shout out Kent Locke. Your boy was a pedophile, but he could take a photo. And of people... of
slogan.
Yeah. So Kent controlled the whole process of abuse. He was a pastor at Common Ground, youth leader, whatever you want to call them. He was there. And so what he'd do is he would pose as this girl online, an attractive teenage girl, and slide into guys' DMs. And he'd pose as these girls and ask for nudes. And the boys, you know, like, you're hopped up on testosterone. You're a young boy. What are you getting an erection just thinking of the good old days? You know?
Good old days? Like yesterday.
And, you know, these boys would do what any 16, 15, 14-year-old would do. They send photos and...
Yo, that is engage predatory in 101.
It gets worse. So these boys would then go to Kent, you know, the one person they trust.
The one person?
Well, you know, he's this figure. Aspect, yeah, exactly, yeah. You know, and it's just shocking and sad because it is tied in with that whole, like, Catholic Church hoo-ha. Anyway, and so they'd ask him, like, Brother Kent. I assume that's what the church people say. Brother Kent. It's probably not. And they say...
Your idea of the church, I believe, is from the 1400s. That's kind of the
model. We were still getting touch back then. But anyway, pressing on. And he would
touchy say... Touchy subject.
Exactly. There it is. And he would literally say, you know, you've done something wrong. I'm sure you, like, sinned, and then hit them with a Bible or whatever it was. And said, just continue sending photos. Because, you know, you've placed yourself in a sticky situation, so to say. It was too easy.
Nah.
It's like taking nudes from a 16-year-old. And and that was his thing. And
borderline confession.
And it was just...
Bro, this is a like, worst-case scenario that you're describing here.
It is.
Like, that is the worst. Because you're actually playing with trust there. And that's something emotionally, if you think about it from the boy's point of view, that's something that's going to be quite damaging, obviously.
But it was just such a terrible, terrible scenario, and it happened to countless boys. And I feel, coming full circle again, that it happened and it's an atrocity, but it's not widely spoken about. No one chats about it. It's almost like culture of, you know, we're fine and move on. But I think the hardest issues that we are confronted with in society, whatever they may be, do need to be met with some comedic flair.
It's a hard thing for the victims, though, because...
Oh, no, I'm not saying the victims now have released a 60-minute special making jokes about their, you know, their harassment or sexual assault. I don't know what the term is, but I think this dirty laundry needs to be aired in public, and we do need to be able in some way to joke about it, and in order to fully confront it, because to be able to joke about something, you need to understand it quite deeply.
Do you think then it indicates a sense of processing?
Sure. And by all means, I'm not saying that if you're like a victim of Kent Locke or family member of that sort of stuff, that your situation is funny. There's nothing funny about what happened whatsoever. I used it more to illustrate the point that humor and comedy and fighting with it, and probably using a case of pedophilia wasn't the strongest to make my point.
This is obviously the extreme.
Yeah, exactly. But we do need to be able to navigate with humor. That's my ultimate.
Yeah.
That's my where I come from, where I'm ending. And on that note, both of us have, I'm sure, would have been picked up whilst we've been chatting here. We've got a very keen interest, a love affair with comedy, comedians, and that sort of art form. And
I think it's a great thing to fall in love with.
Absolutely.
From a young age, to be honest. It just, sets the tone for like an escape, some a world where nothing is taken as seriously. Essentially, my first experience, I've only had one sort of open mic night that I tried, slightly boozy, had the confidence and went up and just kind of winged it. But it is something that I want to give a try in the months to come when I guess things are a bit quietened down and a bit more normal. I think it'll be so much fun to have an attempt at least in South Africa. But this particular instance was during my time in Madrid. And I'd say it was probably towards the end of last year, maybe November, December, obviously pre sort of COVID times. And there was a sort of open mic event. People were kind of doing a bit of poetry. And this was probably my downfall. And it was a bit of a mix. It wasn't like straight comedy. It was like, you know, a little bit of poetry, a little bit of like storytelling sort of things, a lot of like clicking of the fingers. That's what you know as you're going down a bad road.
This is not good.
And very sort of woke evening. And we're a few cervezas, a few beers down. And they call for like a next person, just open mic night. And I just, before I had made the decision, I think my legs just went. I just went for it. And I kind of just decided to, because as the theme was how I fucked up, that was like the theme of the night. So I essentially dragged the audience very, very curiously through a story of mine where essentially I thought I was a hotshot in early university days. And going from sort of all boys sort of high school to suddenly, you know, mixed classrooms, boys and girls in university days, there's a lot of more opportunity to meet the fairer sex and engage with potential like dating. And this was very new to me. I was a bit of a non-dater in high school. Painful time in my life, obviously, to bring up now. Welling up at the thought. But I just became very like overwhelmed with the idea of, you know, going out with girls. And there was an occasion where I said yes to like dates on days subsequent, Friday and a Saturday. And both kind of went decently. I won't obviously mention names here. But they went decently enough to foster the potential for a second date.
And oh, nice.
So these datings just became concurrent. Not for very long, mind you, but there was like a little bit of, plan something for Friday night with X and a little bit of Y on the Saturday, YMCA.
A true misogynist at all.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's obviously, this is just a terrible story about...
Yeah, I'm like, joking. No, you can't forget me the whole evening and then once...
It's clumsy romance. And I was doing like a Hugh Grant impression at one point during this little 5-minute set. And I kind of was just telling the story about how I attempted to date two girls at once in early university days. And the climax of the story a little bit anticlimactic in that I went on a date with this one girl, beautiful girl, obviously amazing personality. I thought she was fantastic to sort of go out with. Went on a date to like a rooftop bar and date's going well. Who do I see but the other girl across the bar? And this is a curious situation where eyes lock and she knows that I know that she knows that I know that something's amiss. I'm talking to this girl, there's like a bit of intimacy. She comes over and I then have to facilitate a meeting of these two girls. Just like first names and just like, just kind of a bit of awkward silence. And I just remember just eating up that moment. It was just, I just wish I could be like under the earth. It's a terrible time.
Wow. I
had to engage with like this. I mean, this is like probably after two dates each. So I mean, it's not down the line. It's engagement with both.
No, I'm with you.
But there was, men are trash. What was the conclusion of that?
That's hilarious.
No, but it was very awkward though.
But I feel that was the other girl on a date?
She had just come in with like a group of friends.
You see,
and the worst thing about it was I saw...
What are her intentions there? What has she been doing?
But I saw like a mutual friend initially. And I thought, oh no, this can't be happening.
Here we go.
And it all happened in slow motion. And I've now painted myself as this bastion of good intent and
you are.
Gentlemanly romance. But I had some very, very dodgy days in early university. But I've since cleaned up my act.
Mm. And you're still with the two of them. It's a true love story.
Yeah, it is.
And on that note, we're going to have to sign off.
Mm.
It's been a pleasure. Let's do an awkward Cyril bump. I feel I've always wanted to see what I look like doing it.
Oh, it's appropriate, I think. Samuel, I must say, this has been a very enjoyable experience. And I will thank you so much for having me on. This has been a pleasure. And I wish you nothing but success. In the coming weeks and months, I'm sure this is going to grow even more.
That's very
kind. You've got something very awesome here.
Very kind. So that was Josh Hill. Thanks for coming on, Joshy.
It's a pleasure.
At certain stage, I thought this guy's funnier than me. I got insecure.
But then the hierarchy reestablished itself.
Oh, no. Then I just pretended I had something in my throat, gave myself a pep talk in the toilet,
yeah,
and came back strong. Mm-hmm. But no, again, such a pleasure to chat with you. And everyone watching, thanks for watching. We really do appreciate it. Well, I certainly do. I hope this was of some value in whatever shape or form. I'm not going to do that YouTuber thing, but you know what those things are that I need. Like a crack at it. You know what
is this
need.
Ransom letter you're preaching?
And then if you've enjoyed the visuals and the sound, that's at Chloe Melville. You can check her out.
Thank you so much, Chloe.
All the cool
things. Excellent job.
And puts up with me 24/7. So she's a superstar.
Mm.
What
more can you say?
That's it.
We're done.
That's it. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this, share it with your friends, your mother, your ex. Share it with your matches on Tinder. Hell, share it with your dog. Even if you hated it, share it with the people you hate. We'll be back next week. Thanks so much.